Let's do this. All right, we are recording. Seth Caskey, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining me all the way from LA.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for extending the invitation. I'm really happy to be here chatting with you today.
My pleasure. That was the most formal kind of part of the conversation done and out of the way. We can get past it.
Yes.
I always start this now. It seems like a go-to thing with everybody, the whole like, how have you been during lockdown, COVID, this weird time for humans, weird time for the industry. Mm-hmm. What's it kind of like being for you, I suppose, in both those regards, sort of professionally and personally?
Sure. I mean, I think it's the biggest thing is this has certainly gone on a lot longer than I think really I personally anticipated. You know, our last day in the office was March 13th, and we thought, oh, this is going to be, we're going to be down for a month or two months. Or like, we thought, you know, this was going to resolve itself relatively quickly, and to see sort of how it's continued and that.
It feels like that whole world war, the whole world over by Christmas kind of thing, you know? Like,
yeah.
They kind of told the guys that back in the first world war, wasn't it? That whole world over by Christmas, and then like years
later. Yeah. I mean, I think there is value and benefit to sort of having that thing that you're looking forward to, or like feeling like there's a light at the end of the tunnel. And I do feel like, you know, the world and we are sort of moving through this and growing and learning, and the industry is changing. And I, you know, some of the things that have been put in place now that production can get back to work, I think are smart things and good things. And I love innovation and, you know, working hard, and I love that we've sort of, okay, this is the situation, this is the hand we've been dealt, now we have to figure out how to do what we do within those constraints. Mm-hmm. And you know, I mean, yes, to say that it's, I like to put, I'm a fan of positive thinking and trying to find the silver lining, or trying to find the good in whatever is happening. That does get exhausting sometimes, so yes, it's been a very trying number of months, just the weight of everything that's been, you know, the pandemic, the you know, we're in the middle of a very contentious election in our country, you know.
No.
I'm very ready for November to coming up. I mean, I'm just very for it to be done. I'm ready for it to be done.
Just either way, just so we know what we're dealing with, at least.
I mean, I certainly have a preference on which way it
obviously
goes.
Obviously. But it's like sometimes the sort of lead up to it can be worse in terms of just the anticipation. And
it's just this constant anxiety. Like, that's what my wife and I were talking last night. Like, we spend, by the end of the day, you're just exhausted because you spend so much energy consuming news. And we try to be fairly good about limiting our consumption of Twitter and Instagram and Facebook and the news, and trying to sort of not be on the phone all day. But you spend all day in this heightened sense of anxiety or this heightened sense of energy. By the end of the night, you're just like wiped out and exhausted. And it just, to have been doing that for so many months, it can get tiring.
Hey, did you watch that documentary on Netflix, The Social Dilemma? Have you heard of that?
I have heard of it. I started it and I got maybe 3 or 4 minutes into it and realized it was going to be super anxiety inducing. And so I was like, I don't think I'm at a place that I can really consume this.
I was going to say, it's like, yeah, kind of what you were just saying has a lot of through lines with what they talk about there. And the whole idea of what you were saying, being mindful of consumption, mm-hmm, of media on take your pick of the platforms, I guess. But just the way it's set up and designed from a psychological, mm-hmm, understanding of the human brain, evolutionarily perspective, to get people addicted to that hit, and just the
algorithms that it's so able to personalize what it does feed to you is,
I think there's great things and really frightening things, and it's sort of that in the wrong hands. And it's that whole thing of, oh, well, if I'm seeing this, then everybody else is seeing this, surely. Mm-hmm. And that's complete bullshit. That's the scary part. So that's what I was kind of alluding to with the whole thing of just let it be over in November either way, because like, you don't know what people in some other part of the country are seeing on their feeds, even though you know this happens. It's, you can't stop it.
Yeah, I mean, it's super interesting. You know, I live on the West Coast, and most of my family lives on the East Coast, and right. we just sort of have. Everybody's different. Everybody has their different opinions, but you do sort of see how people's worldview is shaped by what the culture and the environment they're in and what they are consuming. And sort of like, I'll have conversations with members of my family about stuff that is fairly well known to me and things that have been talked about that they are completely either have not heard of or have heard a completely different spin on it. That it's just, yeah.
From a film and entertainment perspective, let's try and bring this on topic.
Yes.
let me bring Great. This on topic. Cool. This isn't my political podcast, which I should never be allowed to have. do you obviously, like Netflix, Amazon, and all these platforms do tailor in a similar sort of way your content based on what you consumed, which I don't know if I see that as a good thing or a bad thing. I don't know yet in terms of how to label it, but from a creator's perspective, do you think that maybe opens the door to more independent filmmakers, potential showrunners, to, okay, you might not be getting the millions and millions of views of an audience base that some of these super shows do, but do you think it's an opportunity to create little sort of like niche audiences for people?
That's the exact word I was going to use. I think that is certainly what makes streaming a valuable, you know, you can go down a rabbit hole. Yes, you are. I think the goal is to have that, you know, blockbuster that appeals to a mass number of people and millions of people and millions of dollars and all of that. But there are so many niches that you can find a very valuable revenue stream in a very small segment of people that are going to watch your show. And yes, you're exactly right. Like my wife and I, we both have Netflix accounts, or we have the same accounts, and you click back and forth between the two, and we both watch very different things, and we're both getting suggested very different things. But then we will get sort of, you know, if it's a new comedy, we both like comedy. So if there's a new comedy special, or there's a new something that we both watch, that will pop up there. And we tend to gravitate towards that. But yes, I do think that from a creator standpoint, there's an opportunity for, a lot more specific content, you know, and one of the things that I've noticed specifically with Netflix is, you know, they're really bringing in a lot more international content, you know, because all those streaming services are global companies. It's not like CBS and ABC or BBC, you know, that are sort of more isolated to the countries in which they operate, you know, Netflix and they're global. And so they have audiences in those countries, and then, you know, content creators in those countries that then we're able to consume as well, which I think it just sort of adds to what's out there for people to watch.
And then if one of those breaks out, all of a sudden people are aware of, you know, this totally different style of creation. I guess the only one that comes to mind immediately to me is like Money Heist, the Spanish show, which was made by a local TV station originally in Spain. And then I think Netflix eventually picked it up, but it was a good while after it was just sort of aired terrestrially. Mm-hmm. And then the Netflix phenomenon, taking it global.
Yeah.
Now everybody seems to know these actors, and maybe they're more tapped into Spanish content creation, which, having grown up in Spain, going back 10, 15 years, Spanish TV is garbage. Like, was garbage. So to then see this kind of stuff come out is actually an amazing shift for what I would call less traditional countries for that.
And I think what it does is kind of to your point of the Netflix phenomenon of it takes these shows that may have had a far smaller audience in the country that they were made and just opens that door for them to be consumed by so many more people. And I can't help but think that's a good thing.
I think so, definitely. Yeah. I'm pretty sure I'm in my head now thinking people are going to tune in and go, talk about casting. I'm an actor. Why have you got a casting person on, Ashley, if you're not going to talk about casting? So it'll be remiss of me to not talk about what you do professionally. I guess before we do, I always kind of do like to ask the question of what's your origin story, I suppose, of getting into the world of casting. If I'm not mistaken, you were an actor and then kind of moved into casting, which isn't that sort of rare. You don't act anymore at all. It's casting completely for you now, I guess.
I don't. It's really funny. Some people have asked me if I would do it again. And there was a time in our office where we were casting this procedural, and the other casting associate that was working on the project, she's like, there's this role. We're having a hard time finding it. You'd be great. Will you just come in and read for it? I'm like, sure. I still have my SAG card. So yes, I started out as an actor, was here for a number of years, got my SAG card, booked a couple of projects, did what I felt like I needed to do to sort of satisfy that internally. But she asked me to come in and read for it. And I walked in the room, the camera was there. I mean, this is somebody I work with all the time. There was no reason for me to be nervous. And I got so anxious and nervous. And in my head, I was like, nah, I'm good. It's not for me anymore. I think that I sort of reached a point that I had sort of scratched that itch, you know, that I did what I felt like I wanted to do in terms of acting, and I didn't need to do it anymore. And I think casting is what I was supposed to be doing the whole time.
Okay.
It just, I needed to sort of take that journey of understanding the actor to be able to make me what I feel like is a very empathetic, understanding casting person. You know, I moved to LA in 2006 to start that journey for me. I was training at the time. Like I said, got my SAG card, and sort of as a part of that process, started interning in casting offices. I sort of met some casting directors. They were gracious enough to let me come in and sometimes be a reader in their office. This was back in the days of fax machines. I was faxing sides to agents and sort of getting to see the creative process from that side. And I was sort of looking at it at the time as this is a way for me to
connect and get
de-escalate.
It.
Well, connect to them, and then also to de-escalate the nerves, so that when I went in, as you know, when I was going in for the audition, I understood what was happening in the room on that side of it. So I didn't take any sort of nervous energy or stuff moving around or people talking. Like, it wasn't about me. Like, it was like they had a whole life to do, and they just needed to see these 12 people in this hour and move on to the next thing in their day.
And this is like what 2006, when information was available, but maybe not quite as en masse as it is perhaps
totally
now.
Yeah, I mean, there was moving to doing a lot more business online, but it was still a lot of calling, you know, dropping off physical headshots and bringing those to auditions. Yes. And a lot of business between casting and agents was done on the phone, and setting up sessions was done sort of very analog, writing it down on, you know, in pencil on a schedule and erasing it. Yeah. And people around, whereas today it's 99% computerized and everything is done online. And really just sort of connected with that process. Like, I'm a problem solver. Like, that's kind of, you know, I did a little research on you too, and I know that you sort of have a business management background. And I think that sort of you're creative, but you're also sort of an analytical thinker. And I think I very much am the same. And so I love that kind of problem solver. Team building, like understanding systems and sort of getting the right people in the right places. Like, that's energizing to me. And I started to really connect with that part of it.
Because you are the puzzle. You are putting together that puzzle within casting. You know, I guess when you get briefed through as an actor, we might look at it and just go, well, I'm coming in to read for this role, and that's the only thing that matters to me. But to you, it's this huge tapestry of how you can weave it all together and solve this big Rubik's cube, I guess, to the best of your ability.
Yeah, you're really painting a picture, you know. And it's and what I have found out, and what I always like to remind actors, is that casting is one voice in that artistic painting. You know, you have your creators, you have your writers, you have the studio, you have the network, you have everyone who has an opinion about what colors should go where, and how, you know, what shade of purple we should use over here. And so our job is to really kind of bring, now I've gone on this art metaphor that I don't know that I can continue.
It's there. You can.
Bring the right paints and the right options to the table, that then that sort of allows the creative team to put together the right ensemble, you know, because it's not just you as an actor that's going in on one role feel like I'm going in to fill this one piece, but how does that one piece fit into the whole picture? It's frustrating, it's challenging, but it's also the exciting part of the job, because sometimes it's that color or that one person that you were not expecting to be the thing that glues it all together. And that's always fun when you find that missing piece.
And I guess from an actor's perspective as well, you know, we always just look at it as we can do everything and we'll audition for everything. And why couldn't I go up for this and then that next week, which is, you know, I suppose true, but maybe not realistic from a pragmatic looking at it as a business perspective. And so you spoke about using the right kind of paints or colors. I suppose from an actor's side, it's important to know, you know,
what your color is.
Like, yeah. What kind of palette do you offer? And then what offices and what producers and directors or networks do you maybe fit more in the wheelhouse of, as opposed to trying to spaghetti sling everyone all over town just because you act and because they cast, you know, like.
Yes, I think that's very important for actors to sort of understand the product it is that they're selling. And I think that you know, there's a spectrum. I don't think any actor is only one thing and can only play one thing. I think an actor can make a career playing that one thing if that's what they want to do and they sort of want to specialize as
Let's caveat it if we can, Seth, as sort of actors that are maybe in the sort of co-star, guest star era, or maybe don't even have credits yet, where you almost don't quite have that canvas to go out and pick and choose. And so instead of trying to do a zillion things, just honing in for a while and showing, you know, this is what I do and I do it well. You know, Jim Carrey doing comedy and Ace Ventura and Dumb and Dumber, Tom Cruise being Tom Cruise until he eventually could sort of shift. More for those people than say series regs or more established actors.
Yeah, I think if you're just starting out or you've got a few credits, then yes, really understanding, you know, a lot of casting is, who do I believe this person is when I turn the camera on and they haven't said a word? Like, what am I getting from them? Their essence, their energy, just the vibe that I get when they walk in the room. Like, so much of casting is that, and that's not really something that you can change or train away. Like, that just is who you, that's who you are as a human being walking on the planet. And so I think the first step is really understanding who that is. And what roles need that type of person. And so having materials that really showcase you as being able to be that type of person. And whether that's student films or things that you produce on your own, I always encourage actors that are like, I don't have anything. I haven't gotten my first co-star yet. Go out and shoot something, shoot a scene, make a web series, do something creative, create your own content, show me how to use you. You know, that's, I watch a lot of demo of new actors. Cause that's, you know, when you're a casting associate on a show, and when you're in series on a show, a lot of the parts that you're putting on each week, especially on a show like Glow, are these 1 and 2 line co-star parts. There's a strong appetite from producers and the team to see new faces. They don't want to see the, you know, especially on Glow, like they didn't really want anybody on that show that looked like they were on TV. They wanted real faces and real people and interesting actors. And so going out and finding those people, and some of those people were just out of school or didn't really have a ton of credits. And so I really use demo to sort of get a sense of who you are as an actor and who you are as a performer and understanding how I can use you. If not on this project, then okay, I get an idea of sort of your essence and vibe, where you might fit in a project down the road.
There's so many things you said in that.
I know I talk a lot. I'm sorry.
No, in a good way. No, yeah. There's so many things you said, Seth, for God's sake, man. No, that are so like important and so many important through lines for actors to hear. I think one big one was what you said about, you know, you're watching something now, but you're not just thinking about the project here and now. And for an actor, that's incredibly reassuring to know that, okay, it's not really about booking it's that corny thing of don't book the job, book the office, but it sort of
is. That is not corny. That is the absolute truth. I cannot tell you the number of times I have had actors that have come in and they weren't right for the part, but it's like, that's a good actor. I don't know where I'm going to use her, but she's fantastic. And then two shows later, or, you know, on a pilot some other time, it's like, oh, remember she came in for us, you know, and it's, I go back and I bring in those people that I love. And, you know, our office we have sort of the list of actors that kind of are always on our list of people to check and look at when we get a new project. It's the people that we love, that we know that are going to do a good job, that we know are professional, that we know are training, that we know that can handle it. It's like, those are the people we go to first before we start. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Are those people that you've sort of normally cast and work with often, or are those just good actors that you like and you've seen a bunch of times and you want them in the mix?
Yes. And yes.
Oh, yes and yes.
Yes. And people that, like, when I had an office, sadly, I'm just at my home now. But we even still have a stack of headshots. Our office is a little old school on some things. And so we will always take a headshot if an actor brings it into the room. And we had a whole stack of headshots in one of the cubbies in my office that I would go through and be like, people that I want to remember that, oh, we have this role coming up in GLOW. Let's look through this thing first and see if there's three or four people in here we can try before we put out a breakdown and bring in the masses, people that we know we like and we know we want to give the opportunity.
And so, which is awesome. And now I'm just putting my sort of feet in the shoes of any actors listening who would go, great. Now, Seth, how would we get on your radar if we're not already on your radar to possibly, hopefully one day, be one of the headshots in that mix? What kind of things make up that for you, and how could they do it?
Sure. I mean, one of the nice things is our office did at the beginning of this quarantine time, we did a big open call where we asked for actors to send in, you know, 1 or 2 minute monologues or scenes. Oh, yeah. And we got nearly 17,000 of them. That I'm still going through.
I might have been one of those, actually. I actually think I might have been.
You might have been. Might have been. We're processing through those. So it's it, and we're kind of, you know, filing people away.
17,000.
Yes. Yes.
You asked for it.
It was, you know, this was back in the early days of quarantine, and I thought this was just going to be around for a while, and this seemed like a fun project to do, and.
It's been amazing.
We honestly thought it was going to be like 1,000, 1,200, 1,500 people, maybe. Like, none of us, we only put it out on Instagram. None of us really had a ton of followers. We were like, we'll get some and we'll look at it. It'll be a good, fun project for us to do.
Because then agents started getting word. Yes, I think my agent said to me, check this out. And I think people wanted something creative to do. Like, people were just losing their shit. And even if you don't watch them, eventually it might take a long time to watch them. So just the fact that you did it gave people something in that time to latch onto.
Yeah. Yeah. And I am watching them. So if anyone's watching that did submit, or someone in our office is watching them, and we are processing through everything. Cause I do think that's important. We did ask actors to do this, and I like to be respectful of your time and energy that you put into doing it. The least I can do is give you 2 minutes of my time to watch what you've put together.
It just takes longer than you thought when it's 17,000 submissions.
Well, yeah, what's the volume
average number of submissions you would get for like a regular co-star or guest star? It was that bad, you just bailed.
No. My DSLR, can you hear me now?
You're all good. I could hear you before.
Okay. Yes, it has a timer that it times out after 15 minutes and it's a mirrored camera. Yeah. So I just have to refocus it to get it to stay alive.
Yeah, on average, 17,000 sort of submissions for this as an open thing must be infinitely higher than a regular co-star or guest star, which I know could probably get into the thousands. But for a regular role, what would you normally be looking at if you opened it up?
Yeah, I mean, for a regular, you know, for a guest star, you're looking in the I mean, it does depend on sort of how specific the breakdown is. The more open ethnicity, wider the age range, that's gonna increase the number of submissions up to, I mean, I'd say probably 2,000, 2,500 is sort of for a guest star, you know, or as small as several hundred. I mean, I would say several hundred is pretty typical, up to a couple of thousand. And then, you know, when you start getting into, for co-stars, it's, I would say it's in the multiple hundreds, you know, between 100 and 1,000. That's kind of where it is, because, you know, there are a lot of actors who are looking for that first co-star, and then there are a lot of actors that are wanting to move away from no longer willing to do a co-star. So it is sort of that.
But either way, we're talking quite a lot of people.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah.
So, because this comes up all the time, and it'd be sort of great to get your view on how you specifically in your office sort of operates through it. It's that terrible question of what kind of draws you then to a specific person in those submissions. And I know it's so intangible because you're drawn to something. One time it might be the headshot, and the other time it might be the demo reel. But are there any through lines that you can give there, or is it too ambiguous?
I mean, I do definitely think having a good headshot and good picture that really shows me who you are is sort of, I guess, would be the one consistent piece, no matter what the project, no matter what the role, is really having a good, because that's my first thing to click on. And then I'm going to look at your resume. Then I'm going to look at your demo. But I think the thing I like to remind actors, and sort of let me break it down to you for you. So we get a script. We sit down with our creative team. We come up, you know, we write a breakdown. We talk to them about prototypes. Who are some, wait, what's up? If you could cast anybody in this part, who would it be? Or what are you thinking creatively from this, for this part, for this episode? And then so we sort of look at the submissions through that lens of, this is kind of what I'm looking for. I might be left or right of that type or that energy or that essence, but I'm kind of in this general block. Yes, occasionally, you know, our theme in our office is three things you asked for, one thing you didn't. So we always do try and bring that, like, this is not at all what you asked for, but this is a really fun, cool actor that we like, that we want you to meet, that we think could be interesting, that might get the part. So we always do sort of go outside of that sort of window. But I would say, like, if here's my window, I'm sort of applying that filter to my submissions as I go through. I'm like, who looks like they might fit in here? And having a good picture that really shows me, okay, yeah, I buy that person as the HR person of a hospital. Yep, they feel administrative to me. And then drilling down to, if I know them, then, oh yes, they're fantastic. I love them. We should surely try them. If I don't know them, then looking at their demo. If they don't have good demo, okay, let's look at their resume. Are they, you know, fresh out of school? Are they training? Right. It's just sort of understanding them as a, you know, where they are in their career path. I have a big appetite for new people. Like that's because I was one at one time. And so I understand, I have very fond memories of the casting director who gave me my very first co-star job. So I get there's an actor out there who's doing all the right things, or doing all the things that they can to get themselves ready to work. I love being able to sort of find that person and give them the opportunity to book the job. But yeah, if there's one through line, I think it's that picture that really represents you, demo that really shows me what you do. You know, that's part. If I don't know you, it's, I want to see you saying words on screen, and like because so much of casting is the what I get, what's the vibe, what do they feel like on camera.
And in a time like now, Seth, when people probably can't proactively go out and shoot stuff or make their own thing to maybe a super high production level, does it matter if it's not necessarily incredibly pristine production level? No, right? As long as...
Nope. I mean, yes, exactly. I mean, it's a self-tape at home, or it's, you know, I think that it exactly. It's performance, and it is really just the a good tape that you are proud of, that really feel like, this showcases what I do as an actor and what I bring to the table. And then, just like a resume, once you get better footage, then get rid of that one. Like, it's there to use until you don't need it anymore.
I think, yeah, totally with you. I think there's that thing of, like with a startup business, you kind of want it perfect before you launch, but then you'll never launch. So I think there is that opportunity to get in your own head as an actor and go, oh, but this doesn't look like a, this doesn't look like something to the production level of Glow. I could never send it to the people at Cast Glow because they won't think that I'm serious. And it's not about how it looks necessarily. It's more about the essence and the vibe, especially now when COVID.
Exactly. When opportunities are limited for people to be out shooting new things, I like to think of it as, gosh, see, this is where it's funny. Like all of my jobs have sort of led me, all the like random jobs that I've had in my life have led me to this job, which is why I say casting was what I was meant to do the whole time. So for a time I worked for an innovation studio at a university, and part of the innovation process is ideation, and you prototype. And it's like, you prototype the thing that you think it's not ever. You prototype, okay, we find out, well, this piece doesn't work on this, or the shape of this is different. Okay, so we change that. So I think of your demo. I'm getting chills talking about that. That's cool. That's a good.
Is that a first?
It's a first for me for those pieces falling together. Yeah, it's ideation, it's prototyping until, yes, like at some point you're going to get to a finished product that's manufactured and is out for the public, and it's going to be that perfect polished piece. Like you have your two sort of films that you have that are done, that are beautiful and highly produced and well acted, and you know it's amazing to look at. But I bet you went through some rehearsal and some sort of ideation phase in getting that together. Which is, if that's what you have right now,
you just have to start. Thank you. First of all, I suppose I should definitely say thank you for that, and then yes, just starting. You know, I
think
for me, it was just a case of pick up a camera, who do you know, make something. It's not going to be great, and then refine as you go along.
Mm-hmm.
And then keep pushing yourself and growing, and go from a short film to a short film that isn't funded by you, that's funded by someone else,
mm-hmm.
a bigger project. And, you know, I don't think that ideation necessarily stops. It just goes to another level where you try and add on new bells and whistles, you know?
And you start bringing in more people to that. And that's where, you know, the creative collaboration comes in, is other people. Oh, well, we have, you know, you have a solid kernel of an idea, and then you bring in a casting team that's able to even have, you know, we read the script and we have some ideas of ways they can go. And then you bring in production designers, you bring in costume, you know, wardrobe and costumes, and, you know, it's
a collaboration.
Yeah, it's totally a collaboration.
It's the whole, you know, faster alone, further together. And I think mm-hmm. there's times where you need both, because, you know, you'll have to put your head down and just be you in your zone doing your thing. And the same with production, and actors have to go and then, you know, prepare. But ultimately, that only takes you so far, and then it's when the whole thing comes together that you can get to the level of, you know,
mm-hmm.
things you've done with Glow. Otherwise, Glow would just be an idea in someone's office somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Without the whole team. I love how we're talking about this from a slightly more business entrepreneurial perspective, just because no one's spoken about it in that kind of implicit way before. But I do personally at least believe that is the truth of it, because I don't like saying the whole we're the product as an actor, because it just sounds bleh, but there is truth to it. But I do think that if we saw stuff more from the entrepreneurial perspective, it kind of makes it easier to compartmentalize what we're doing as creatives.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, entrepreneurs and startups to me are the most equivalent and similar thing to an artist, with the uncertainty and the amount of investment you have to put into it until you get any returns. It can be a long time. You need to bring in other people to be part of your team. The parallels to me are so sort of implicit, and yet you're the first person to start talking about it in these kinds of words and talking about like ideation, which sounds very MVP entrepreneurial.
And I think that to make it maybe sound more creative, I think it's that idea that comes from writing of kill your darlings or murder your darlings or whatever that is, you know, where it's because what actors do is so personal. I do feel like it's hard for actors to pick their own pictures or to edit their own demo, because they're so emotionally and personally connected to
everything,
to the craft, right? And it's a personal decision, or it feels personal. And I think there is value in not removing it to make it only business and making it cold, but there is value into being able to objectively look at the art and look at what it is that you do bring to the table, because everyone brings something unique to the table. And that's casting works when the right role finds the right actor at the right time. And it's just understanding who you are and what you bring to the moment. And it might be your moment on this project, but there's going to be a moment at some point. I don't know.
It does. I mean, I totally get you, because you can pull your hair out thinking, when's it going to be my time? When's it going to be my chance? And as long as, I guess, you're allowing yourself to show that essence and showing up for the work, the right thing will come to you at the right time. I guess the big challenge, and I know it's something that I had, and I think most actors probably do at some point, is allowing yourself to fully let that side of you be seen, which is the work. But to your point about anxiety and coming in the room, which I think all of us have in some capacity, and the nerves come there and we get in our head about a gazillion things of, you know, thinking we have the job before we have it, or getting stressed out because of what it is, or whatever it might be. I don't know the answer to how we can get to a place where we can sit in a way that's more relaxed and comfortable with that, to just come in and enjoy owning the work for what it is in the space, or in the digital sphere, I guess now. But you obviously see people a lot more than I do. So from a casting side, have you seen any kind of patterns, any kind of things that you could maybe share as words of wisdom to actors in terms of how to try and navigate getting to that space? Because that's the golden kind of land, really, you know?
I think it's going to be a personal for every actor. But I think
it's a tough question.
I mean, I know how to answer it, because it's the truth of it is. I'll give you the soundbite first, and then we'll sort of unpack it.
Sure.
Realize that you booked the job. By the fact that I'm requesting you to self-tape, or I'm giving you an appointment to come in, or I'm Zooming with you to in this age, the job is yours. All you have to come in and do is do your thing. You've already done all the work to get me to notice you, to bring you in and think that you're right for this particular job. You have the job. And I think when a person is able to approach an audition from that mindset of, I'm just here to do the work, take it or leave it, like this is what I have to bring in this moment, great. And they don't need it for their insurance, or need it because they are a fan of the show and want to be on the show so bad, or want to impress me as a casting person. Like, if they can just come in and do the thing, that and from a standpoint of, you got the job, I hired you for this 5 minutes that you're in my room. You're not getting paid for it, but I hired you because there are 2,500 other people that I chose not to hire for this moment. And so it's, you got in the door. Just accept that the job is yours for now. If this moves forward and you get paid for it later, amazing. Back to our point that we were making earlier, but just come in and do it. And even if you don't book this job, you have made an impression on us that we go, she's not right for this, but she's a good actor. She can handle herself under pressure. We'll remember her for something down the line.
Yeah.
And I think that is so much easier said than done.
That's the thing. It's like you said, it's personal for everyone in their journey. Not as an actor or an artist, just as a person on this weird earth that we're all living on right now, to at some point get to that stage in their life. And I don't know I don't know if you can even manufacture that necessarily. You know, I think it's just something to process and be mindful of, and whatever trigger it is, whatever wording or framing, like that's the first time someone said it quite the way you have, in terms of, you know, you've already got the job. It is your job when you come in and have the audition. And if that's enough for one person to go and take away and make them feel relaxed, then that wording's great because it works for them. For someone else, maybe it's a different mantra or something, but I guess everyone has to find kinder self-talk, I suppose.
Yeah. And an understanding of, I know that casting can also often be seen as sort of the gatekeeper of the people that are
my
favorite people keeping you out. You know, where the center are at the gate, keeping people out, but that's not, we're letting people in. And it's like, I want you to be the one that gets in and gets the job. One, because maybe you've been auditioning for me for years and I'm so excited for this to be the thing that you book. Two, I've got 26 parts that I've got to do in 2 weeks. Please just be the person that is the part that I don't have to worry about this role anymore.
Yeah.
Like casting wants you to be the answer. We want you to do good. We want you there. Like that is the one, like, I want you in my session. I gave you a spot in my session. I want you there. And yes, that's where, back to when I was interning in casting offices, understanding that there's a whole life that's happening in that office that you're walking into that has absolutely nothing to do with you.
Yeah.
And I think that's good practice too for being on set. And it's one of the reasons why I, as an actor, decided I got very good at getting the job and I got very good at auditioning. I realized I didn't really like being on set, because to me that was another level of pressure of hundreds of people and thousands of dollars and all of this, like it was depending on me and I sort of crumbled underneath that pressure. But now I have the perspective of going, none of that had anything to do with me. All I had to do that day was come in and say my lines, hit my mark, and go home. And that's all you have to do in audition, is just come in and do the thing and not allow whatever might be around you to affect stories. You, because it doesn't have to do anything. It doesn't have to do with you.
We've built up all these stories about what it's supposed to mean. It's, I'm going to do a product placement. Have you read this book? Have you read Sapiens by Yuval Noah Harari?
I have not, but I've heard of it.
The book?
Yes, I do know of it.
I don't get any affiliate commissions by doing that, by the way. That's just putting that disclaimer out. But he talks obviously loads about stories and the way that as societies, we just build these different narratives up. And, you know, from the case of an actor to what you just said, that's the perfect point of how we do that within our profession. We create these stories in our head about the audition or the job or being on set that we feel like these narratives are so personal, because it is us as the product, mm-hmm. that we believe them implicitly. And then when something doesn't play out the way we think it should, the story's so strong that, again, that self-talk is really cruel. You know, like, I think it's amazing you're talking about when we get an audition, that is the job, we've got the job. My concern, if I go into the deep, dark recesses of my mind, would be, you could let yourself trick yourself by thinking, oh, but he wants me to get the job, and he just said he wants me to get the job. But then if he's called me in and I've not got the job, I must have done something wrong. And maybe I'm, you know what I mean? It's the imposter syndrome that can kick in. And all these stories that are just complete bullshit are the bigger challenge in some ways than learning how to be a good screen actor.
Yeah. Because you know, to your point earlier, the job of the actor is to let let themselves be seen. And you have to, I mean, that is the job too. Like, you have to use someone else's words in an imaginary situation and allow yourself to be completely vulnerable and open and truthful in that moment to let the camera see all of that. And you have to, in the work, you have to step outside your own Ashley story, Seth's own Seth story in that moment, and be this character in this moment, living truthfully. So using an audition as an opportunity to practice that, maybe that's a good way to
another good reframe.
It's audition is your practice of being on set. You have the job, now just practice doing the lines, and think of it that way. Think of it as a rehearsal. Think of it as, you know, the actor that comes in that doesn't, I've heard it said this way and I don't like it, but the actors who don't need the job, or who just are just, who just come in and do the, I know that sound, there's that's not qualitative.
I know, they just come in and do the thing.
Like just, they just come in and say the words and go home. And it's like, they're a nice person. They did the lines, maybe it'll work. And then understanding that, you know, of the 2,500 people that were submitted, I brought in 30. My producers are going to see that these are made up numbers. Producers are going to see 10. They're going to pick 4. The network is going to pick 1. So the fact that anybody gets the job actually is amazing. And there are so many steps in that process that the actor has no control over. Like the only bit of input really that the actor has in the getting the job process is be on time, know your lines. Don't be weird in the audition. Like, don't be weird in the audition. And then you have to walk away and then just trust the process that if it's, does that make sense? Because there's totally. So many variables totally. And there's so many people that are like, I love this purple, but I really want more pink in this part. Can we add more pink? Well, she's really dark purple. I don't know that she's really going to be what you need then if you really want more pink.
Yep.
Purple is fine. Purple is great. I love purple. There's totally a place for purple. Just not in this particular painting at this time.
I think just having more conversations and people being able to hear more of this kind of talk helps demystify part of the process a bit more so that actors can just sit a bit more at ease and go, okay, like Seth said this, and then they've heard other people say it. And all of a sudden it's not just one person's opinion on that's how it works. It's that's how it works. And having knowledge is empowering to then be able to come in and just do the work. Yes, I get that. That's also, as you said, easier said than done sometimes. If you've got rent to pay and bills and like right. acting is your only thing. Maybe it's an era where we have to have multiple, you know, strings to our bow and multiple income streams. I don't know. That's another conversation for another show, but.
Yes, I'll say something. I told you I like to go on tangents, but to that point, I think, and maybe that's another characteristic of the actor, those who have something else. You know, I can't tell you the number of times that during that sort of brief chit-chatty, either before or after an actor comes in the room, especially if I know them, like we will talk about anything but acting. Oh my gosh, how about your dog? Or I saw on Instagram you were doing this. Or it's like someone who has a life outside of just trying to get every job, I think is psychologically helpful for the person that they've not invested every bit of energy and time and thought into, because it's gonna remove some of the importance and some of the
pressure, I guess.
If you focus on how much you don't have something, then you don't have it because you're focusing on how much you don't have it. Like
you self-perpetuate that kind of eventuality, right?
Yeah. I think that it's.
But I also think this is something Richard Hicks said this when he spoke to me, and I hadn't heard it before, and it kind of struck a chord with me, and I found that maybe I'd been guilty of it in the past too, where. We have that strain of actor who, like, obviously we know about the times when we really, 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 really want it. And it's so obvious and there's almost desperation seeping out of our pores. And we know that that's not great. But then there's the other kind of angle where sometimes we're told, oh, well, just, you know, you'll get more chances to get the job when you don't give a fuck about the job. And when you don't care about it, that's normally when you book it, you know, like. You know, when you go for that audition for Halloween Havoc 72 that you don't really want and you end up doing it because you weren't in your head? Well, that's what you got to try and fabricate. And he was like, yeah, but then you find yourself getting into a place where you play off that you don't care. And you sort of try and act like you're too cool for school. And the point that he made that struck with me was that's equally an avoidance tactic to committing to the work, because you're just sort of artificially detaching. And I thought that was a very important point that no one had really brought up. And I thought, there's a there's these extremes. Somewhere there's a balance in the middle where I think it's got to be okay to care and want it. Otherwise, what are we doing? But it also has to be safe to go. But when I know that it's, to your point, the kind of setup that it is, I've got to be okay with not getting it because it's a crapshoot and I got to live my life.
Yeah.
I went on a tangent there too.
No, what I think that illustrates is just how, I mean, that's why I have so much, that's why I'm glad that I had the journey as an actor and our actor, our office, Liz Barnes, who I work with, her husband is an actor, Tanis Valley in our office, she's a former child actor. And so it's like, we get it. Like, you guys have picked the hardest possible job to do, you know, because of what you're asking of yourself to do emotionally and allowing yourself to sort of be emotionally available and vulnerable and present in these circumstances. And then you're also, the job is auditioning. And it's like, you're going to not get many more roles than you actually get. And to come back to that day after day, year after year, and say, I'm going to continue to put myself out there to do that, it's admirable. It's hard, and it can be soul crushing. And so finding something that, whether that is writing and shooting and making your own material, whether that is having a survival job or something else that you do that creatively does feed you or that can financially help you not go into every audition holding so tightly to the fact that I need this to pay my rent or I'm going to live in my car. Like, it's tough.
You got to build a life and not put all your eggs in one basket.
Yeah.
And I think we're seeing that with a lot of things now with the pandemic, that it doesn't just apply to artists and actors necessarily, just with the way that the world has kind of shifted and evolved and mm-hmm. moved. And I don't really have a point with that, but it seems like, but
no, yes. I mean, I think right now we are all I think about our office. We talked before we started recording and the fact that just over the weekend, we found out that Glow is not, Netflix has decided to cancel the fourth season order of Glow, and we had already started working on that project. Well, Liz and I don't have another gig right now. I mean, we're wrapping up, the office is wrapping up a couple of small things. One was a pilot that we were doing that shut down before the pandemic that they're coming back and sort of finishing up. Another is maybe it's not something I'm working on, but like now I'm in a position of, I don't have a job now. And what does our industry look like going forward? How are we going to get back to work? What are we going to, we're all in this together. We're all, especially right now, I think that we're all on different, we all have different roles to play on a production anyway, but we're all now similarly trying to figure out what's next.
Yeah.
And what do we do in the meantime?
Yeah.
And how do we keep ourselves, you know, that's why I am so thankful that I have these open call tapes to watch. Like, at least it's keeping me, I'm not doing it for any project or trying to find an actor for a role, but at least it keeps me watching, meeting new people, like just kind of working that muscle for me. And I think that we all have to find ways to stay engaged now, especially, but I think even in normal times, like finding a way to, you know, in LA, we encourage actors to do plays. Like, we have a lot of smaller theater companies that do, it's a time commitment. The theater's, you know, it requires an investment of the actor, but it's just something to keep you feeling like you are moving forward. You're growing as an artist. You're still in the game.
Yeah. You're not just on the audition circuit or waiting to.
Yeah.
Cause that's where it can be a little bit soul destroying. Cause you don't really feel like you have a life outside of just hitting the circuit, from a creative perspective. Mm-hmm. But then, yeah, to your point, what the hell is that going to look like? You know, we're shifting into most likely full on self tapes and Zoom auditions and a weird world that opens lots more opportunities up for people, but also loses that in-person. You know, this is great, but it's not quite the same as, you know, getting direction from somebody in the office and having that time to just sort of adjust and play. And yeah, there's pros and cons to all of that, I guess.
I really love I love the Zoom, where I can have this sort of interaction and I can work with an actor. I will say, here's another like idea that I had, you know, that I think a way for actors to look at this process. The job that you're asking for is for you to live truthfully in an imaginary circumstance, feel truthfully, let a piece of technology see that, transmit it over the airways, and for me, sitting wherever I'm sitting, to feel something. Like, that's the job. If you're, especially if you're looking to work in film and television, like you're looking to work. It's not like a theater experience where you're right there in the room with the person. You're able to sort of, the energy can pass between the audience and the actor. Like, you're putting, the actor's putting their energy out into the world. The camera is seeing it, transmitting it to me. And I'm supposed to feel something over here. Like, that is what happens in a Zoom. Like, if you can get me to feel something in a Zoom audition, boom. Like, look at these Zoom things as great practice for the job that you want. Look at the self-tapes as a great practice for the job that you ultimately want. Like, yes, it does feel disconnected, but yeah, so does working on set around all these people that shooting things out of order, and it feels not real life at all, but that the end product is, I feel something on this end. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. I think we're just reframing stuff based on what we're doing now. And I'm not saying in-person auditions aren't right or wrong. It's not about that. It's just, that's what we've always done.
Mm-hmm.
But to your point, does that always have to be the best way? Maybe in some cases, yes. Maybe in other cases, perhaps not. But you're totally right. I mean, the end consumption of what we do performance-wise is for screen, going through a screen.
So screen. I kind of don't hate it. I mean, yes, I do. I'm not a, you know, I don't love the self-taping process. And we sort of had... our office had a policy of really using self-tapes as a last resort if you couldn't get in the room. Like, we would always much rather have the actor in the room. So I'm going to be much more of a fan of this, because I do feel like the self-tape is, I kind of send my information out into a void. You send your take back into a void. We hope that they meet in the middle. If it doesn't, then I have to reach out to your reps and give notes. It's a very complicated
It's a different
communication process. Yeah.
It's a different skill set for both sides. And
yeah.
There is no room for adjustment or redirecting. And I guess
that's certainly not real time. Like, that's why I like
this. But that's what you want to format. See, right? I mean, because that's ultimately what the director is going to want to know if that's being, you know, taken on board or not by the actor. That's key.
Yep.
So a Zoom gives us some inclination as to whether we can do that. It's just new. And, you know, we're human. We don't like change as humans. You know, it's just, that's all it is. I think as we're getting more used to it, we'll probably start to go, God, we should have done this a hell of a lot sooner.
Mm-hmm. I mean, although I do like working from home or being at home. Like, I mean, I haven't put on jeans in months. Like, I do like kind of being in the comfort of my house. I will say that.
Well, it's, you know, work-life balance too is an important thing as well.
Yes.
So there's positives, there's silver linings to come out of all of this. Listen, I can see that I've got Scott here in the waiting room, and he's probably been there for a while. Let me bring him in.
Cool.
I'm going to give you a break from me, and I'm sure he'll talk about Glow quite a bit.
All right, let's do it.
We were talking about it yesterday, so I've intentionally kept Glow quiet. Hello, what kind of background is that?
No, I was like, welcome to my virtual office. I wasn't going to have it. Then when I loaded up Skype, Zoom, it was up. And I was this is hilarious. Let's just keep this on.
It looks like you're at a startup company somewhere or something.
Yeah.
It's great.
With your head kind of melting into the background.
I know. I love yours, though, Steph. It was like, you got some color in the background there.
Oh, thank you. Yes, this is my home office. I brought home some fixtures from the office and, you know.
It looks like a black magic camera on you with some deep focus.
I said he's got a straight high HD camera going.
This is what we need for our project, Ash, that.
I know. We do. We need some proper cameras, not just these onboard laptop
cameras. Web cameras, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm Scott. Nice to meet you. Thanks for
having me. Nice to meet you too. Yes.
Good. How's it going? How you doing?
That's a loaded question. Good. I've really, in the last hour, I've had a lovely conversation with Ash, and it's been great. And we've been having a really good time. Overall, I think pretty consistent with how most of the world is doing, like just trying to stay positive and make it through everything that we're going through and be supportive of everyone and take care of people as I can. So.
Yeah, for sure, man. I feel that. Yeah. That's awesome. Hey, I was reading your bio that was really fun on your website, and I was interested to know. Yeah.
I'm like, what was on there? Okay.
It's actually a great. It's, you know, it's a little bit of the date, so I think you're okay if you've not looked at it all. It's pretty good.
Okay.
And I know it's like I didn't know that you used to be an actor, and you got hooked on casting. So I'm interested to know what was the hook. Like, what's the thing that makes you tick with it? What do you love about it?
Gosh, so many aspects of it. Ash and I sort of touched on this earlier. Like, I'm a problem solver, and so I love the sort of putting the pieces together of the casting process. I also love reading with actors. Like, that is probably my favorite thing to do, is because it still sort of scratches that itch for me of being able to play and act. I mean, I don't try and pull focus from an actor's audition when they come in the room, but I do like to sort of give an actor as much as I can to help them get a good audition. Really the whole process for me, you know, casting was kind of a way I started interning to sort of a way as to market myself to casting directors. And just, I fell in love with the whole thing of getting a script and breaking it down and reading a script now, thinking about who makes sense here. You know, when I first interviewed with Liz for the job, I told her I was a person, I watch TV with IMDb up on my phone as a person in the world, like not someone who's even in casting. Like, I love figuring out, who is this actor? Where have I seen them before? What have they done before? Oh my gosh, they're so interesting. Oh, I didn't even recognize them. Who are they with? Like, that, it's the kind of understanding. I like to understand how things work. And I think casting sort of lets me understand how what I see on screen works and how all those pieces sort of fit together.
Yeah, so it says like you watched them, you just wanted to decipher everything from what the screen back and like where did people come from. That's awesome, man. I love that. I used to work in casting way back when in the UK for a couple of years, and the room for me was really fun. Mm-hmm. Behind and in front of the camera, I just loved that process, really.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Have you guys been doing, like, other than obviously receiving self-tapes, but doing any Zoom stuff and like with auditions and things like that as well?
We have pretty much been shut down since pandemic started. I mean, we have had, you know, we are starting to come back a little bit. We have a pilot, our office has a pilot that we were doing before we shut down that we're sort of coming back in to finish. And yes, we've been doing self-tapes and Zoom. And then I'm not sure if you all use breakdown services in the UK or not, but they have EcoCast, which is their sort of self-taping service.
FYI, and they've rejecting Scott's in LA.
In my UK office,
in LA, in his UK office, sounding British. I'm in the UK, sounding American.
Well, and that was what I was going to ask you after we finished. I was like, are you doing an accent now, or do you not have one? I was like, I was really expecting you to sound more British than you do.
We'll get into that later. That's a good story. If you know a good psychiatrist, maybe they'll let me figure it out.
Thank you. Come my way.
That's funny. So Breakdowns has come out with a Zoom type product that we have used a couple times. They're sort of still working out all of the kinks in that. But yeah, we're figuring out different ways to really make sure that we get the best auditions from actors. I think that's the ultimate goal, is whether it's a self-tape, whether that's, you know, you work better as someone who goes off and does the material and sends it in, or I personally and several in our office really prefer this interaction, you know, while it's not face-to-face and while I can't have you in the room, at least it does, I get a sense of your vibe and your energy in this exchange that I think helps inform an audition too. I think that's equally as important as the work is this little bit of exchange that we get to have before or after you tape. Nice.
It's interesting as well, because yet what you just touched on there with the Zoom stuff and like what doing the work Zoom, there is, we're doing an acting class every week, and there has been some kind of like weird connection with being able to do it digitally, where it feels, if you can get that authenticity, you can still feel stuff through how people are like, and you're like, this is a screen, this is weird, but you can read it because the camera's still picking up a lot of stuff as it does on the film. So
yeah, exactly. And that's the job. I mean, we touched on this right before you joined. Like, that's the job actors are asking for, is to make the person on the other end of that transmission feel something. And if you can do that in a Zoom call, boom. I mean, that's it right there.
I gotta say, this is interesting, because I've also, my experience with it and seeing my fellow colleagues and stuff have their experiences, I think there's some kind of quicker confidence building for actors with using this medium, from what I've experienced. And even part of me where I feel like I don't feel as pressured. Even the pressure could sometimes be really good, sometimes it could be really bad, but then it not being there sometimes with having this like access to it, being okay, I'm in my space, my dog's over there chilling out, I can have a good meal after this, and you know, whatever like there is something about turning up in your own space that can give you a space to be like, cool, I got this, a bit more than it does when you're in that smaller waiting room and you're the next guy's in the exact same role for you, and you're like, cool, this is it, right? Mm-hmm. Who signed the contract then, you know? There's something, there's some confidence building in it, I think, for a lot of people.
Yeah, I can totally see that. I can totally see that, feeling comfortable in your room. And then also, like, kind of going back to something we talked about earlier that just hit me, I think there's also a level of forgiveness or understanding on the side of casting or the side of producers or the side of the studio. It's like, we understand this isn't going to be perfect. Like, there's a bit of like, this can be a little rougher, so that it frees the actor up to feel like it doesn't have to be perfect. Whereas when they're coming into the room, they have to feel like it has to be perfect. And they put all of that pressure and anxiety on themselves to make this the take. And it's like, things like, yes, it still needs to be good. You still need to do your work. But yes, if you glitch here, or the audio isn't perfect, or the dog barks or something, like that, the people receiving your audition are going to be more understanding of that. That sort of can alleviate some of that tension.
You just reminded me, when you're saying about the dog barks and something, the best meme I think of 2020 has been, you're on mute. How many times has that happened? You know,
you're on mute. Yourself. I'm, yeah.
You know, that's amazing, man. And just one thing. This is more asking for a friend. Not really. Yeah, my dog. O1 visas versus green cards for the old expats. When it comes to, obviously, when it comes to the network projects and the studio projects and all those kinds of things, I found that it's always kind of a bit of a gray area. And there's a lot of like talk of, yeah, you really need a green card and this and that to even be let into the room, versus having an O1 visa, which, you know, I know NBC have a thing about it. And I know that, I think Sony has a bit of a thing about it through their past experiences. But what's been your experience with, I don't know if you met many on the O1 visa that you've wanted to work with.
I've had to get someone one, and I've had to work with someone who had an expired one. And so I think my biggest advice to an actor and their reps is, be 100% honest from the beginning. If you need it, if you don't have it, if you have it, like if it's expiring, like that I think is what, because when we're looking at actors to hire an actor either on an O1 green card. In my experience, it hasn't mattered. Like, that has been like the easiest one that like everybody already has everything they need. Because there does get to a point where we sort of turn it over to business affairs and sort of let business affairs deal with all that. Like, we deal with the creative, make sure that you can legally work here, and then they handle right. all of the legalese and the contracts and all of the paperwork that you need to be able to get paid. Yeah. So my knowledge of that process does sort of drop off at some point. Sure. And from my experience, people with green cards, there never seems to be an issue once we sort of pass that on. But with the visas, it's, and with actors who are on that, you know, SAG eligible, non-union, like just being as transparent as possible, because for casting, it's oftentimes we're moving at a very quick pace and eliminating, or just if there's going to be a roadblock, if there's going to be a stumble, if there's going to be a hurdle I have to get over, I need to know that before it hits me in the face. Because that, if it hits me in the face and I found out that it's something that I could have avoided, or we could have backed up, you know, you're the choice, but we could have backed up somebody else that lives down the street that's a US citizen that we could have hired tomorrow, like, and I didn't back it up, or I got my creative really excited about that happened on the project we did. We got the creative really excited. We were told from the manager that this actor had an O-1 visa. Got the creative really excited about it. They wanted to hire him. Oh, well, actually, he's got all the paperwork and stuff in place to get one, but he just needs the thing. Then we were 2 weeks out, and then it was this mad scramble. We were the day before he was supposed to be on set. He had to fly to Vancouver to leave the country, then to fly back in. Like, there's all the things to like get him out and then back in on. He went out on the tour, back in on the O-1. Like, there, it was just this, and everyone was so stressed out and anxious, and it was. We're all holding our breath until he got to set, and it all worked out fine. It was amazing. He did an amazing job. Like, it was totally worth all of the hoops we had to jump through to do it. But the fact that we didn't know that we needed to left a taste in everyone's mouth.
Totally understood. Everything in black and white from the beginning is the best.
And from the actor side, having all of that ready to go, like, you know, if we do need to get you one, making sure that you have all of the documents and paperwork ready to go. And then if you have one that's expiring, that was the other thing we went into, sort of handling your business to know that that's something that you need to be on top of, or you're having your manager sort of be on top of that with you, so that you don't ever get to a place that it expires.
Got you. Awesome. Thank you for that.
Yeah. I don't know if that was helpful or not. Very nice, but.
No. It's perfect. It's just good. No, luckily I'm checking the boxes. I'm like, yep, that's fine. That's good. So fun last question I have is, what is your future self? What really would love to work on project-wise, if you could pick any type of show, genre, or even if it's something that is a franchise or anything, like, is there something that you're like burning to work on?
I have said out loud in the office several times, I would sleep at the office to do anything Star Trek. Like that way, like any of the features, any of the new shows, like that was a show that was very, especially Next Generation. Like, I'm a sci-fi person, like as a person who likes to watch content, like that's kind of what I have always gravitated towards. So anything Star Trek would be my, like, I would do whatever I had to do that. So
you get on really well with my friend Dana. She's completely obsessed with Star Trek, geeks out on it, and it's her long life dream to be on the show. So I'll put you guys in touch at some point just to talk.
Please. Just to geek out about it.
Yeah, just to kind of geek out on it, because she'll love it. Yeah. That's awesome.
But I'll never say no to anything. I mean, with any reason, like, I'm happy to talk to anyone. That's what we were telling Ash before. Like, I don't have a job. Like, we found out over the weekend that Glow was, that Netflix canceled the fourth season of Glow. And so that's sort of a bummer and, you know, disappointing. But so casting is like actors too. Like there comes a point where we don't have an endless supply of jobs. We have to go out and get work too. So I'm happy to cast anything.
Yeah, understood. Good, man. Yeah. Hopefully that all comes back around when we work it all out, huh? You know, there's got to be silver linings in it somewhere. And that show needs to come back. It's phenomenal. So
I'm hoping that, I mean, who knows whether somebody else will take that on. You know, they did know going into it that season 4 was going to be the last season. And so they had a lot of storyline to sort of, I don't know that it was ever going to like package up in a nice bow. Cause I just don't think that's that show, that everything is not completely resolved, but I would love for some of those characters' arcs to finish a little bit and people to sort of see how they've grown and who those characters become. And maybe we will, who knows?
I hope we will.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, look, this is, thank you. I'm done with questions.
You're done?
Wonderful. I think I'm done. Nick, do you want to come some more? Let's get some more going. How many hours we got in a day right now?
What's in your file of facts over there in your...
Let me just...
like your very IKEA office you've got going on. It's great. It's great.
It's so dull, isn't it?
This could be a commercial. There could be a new... The new commercial setup will be just Zoom superimposed backgrounds and you just do it at home.
That's it. I was thinking, like, I should set up like a Tarantino backdrop of something. And I was like, I'm just going to leave this because this is hilarious.
That's pretty funny. So Scott, you're here now in the States?
Yes. Yeah. I actually came in a couple of years ago. Okay. I had my O1 for 3 years. Just renewed, so we're good to go for another 3 years. I love it here. I love it. It's great. I think I'm gonna try and go back and forth a little bit the more that I sit and mull on it. I would still like dip my toes in and out of both places. And I think after all this that we've gone through this year, I'm also like, I do need to kind of just see a lot of my friends and family back home as well as being here too. So there's that whole thing. So my mind right now is like, right, can I juggle both things? But for the most part right now, I've been nothing but here for the last 2 years. Yeah.
Yeah. Got it. Yeah. I think it, this time has certainly helped put in perspective what is important. And I think that's a great point. You know, it's seeing family is important. And as long as there's streaming services and TV and movie, like, production is going to continue. Like, this is not going away. It's going to come back a lot slower and there's going to be fewer for a while, but this is never going to go away. Making sure that you spend the time with those that you love is super important too. So
yeah.
I totally get that.
And also with Zoom and all this stuff, we don't have to necessarily be in town all the time to audition anymore. So
yep.
It's more just availability to work wherever the actual shoot is. Or maybe callbacks, if callbacks are going to be in person, if I don't even know. So in some ways, again, it's another silver lining that, you know, Scott's allowed to travel.
Yes.
Scott,
what my wife and I were talking, you know, that we had talked about taking all of our families on the East Coast. And we're like, we could just kind of go there for the rest of the year. Like, we could leave. I mean, even if I got a job, like, I could still work from there because I'm not, it's highly unlikely I'm going to be going in to sessions and seeing people in person. I'm going to be doing this or self-tape. So yes, I think you're right. This does afford us the ability to have a little more flexibility in our real life, but that, you know, we are available to be in the place we need to be when we need to be there. And the fact that you have an O1 means you can be here and work and it's not a problem. So that's a great point.
Oh, you frozen, Scott. That's fantastic. Uh-oh. Well, I was going to evict you anyway and wrap up the call. Oh, no, you're back.
Yeah, you're back.
No, you're not. Oh, yes, you are. Well, I'm going to evict you anyway because it's just going to happen again.
All right.
Unless you have any more final questions for Seth.
No. I think it's just been really lovely to speak to you.
Likewise.
Thanks for having me on, Ash. And
always.
Yeah, hopefully we'll see you digitally soon.
Otherwise, absolutely.
In person at some point when we get past all this crazy
all this stuff. But, yeah
man, but you take care. And
absolutely. You too. Really, really nice to meet you.
You too, man. You too. Bye, Ash, bud. Talk to you soon.
Take it easy. Thanks, Scott. Bye. Yeah, I should have prefaced that because his weird office background didn't make it seem like he could be anywhere.
Anywhere.
I did interject, like, no, the whole point was Scott is in LA. So I wanted to make it clear, given that, you know, you are LA. So
yes.
I'm glad we had that chat. With the visa, quickly, I know I know you're not a specialist and you're not an immigration lawyer or nothing, but my one question would be around with people who do have the O-1 or don't, whatever the case may be. I assume, correct me if I'm wrong, you would only see people for a co-star or guest star if they had the documents already. Like, I doubt you're like,
yes.
for a co-star for sure, you're not going to go through all that process. So
thank you for that distinction. So yes, so for anything in series, a series regular is the only person I would consider that we would consider that for. But yes, if anyone's coming in the room for a co-star or guest star, ideally I would want them to have all of their immigration paperwork locked in place and they are a paid up SAG member for stuff that we shoot, because the likelihood of you having to be on set tomorrow or the day after tomorrow, I don't have the time for you to sort of do all of that stuff. I need to know that when I hire you, you can
legally work.
Go to set to work. Yep. Yep. Yep.
But for the series reg that opens, that's the one time where you're more open to, if the person's right and you really like the read and everything aligns somehow, time permitting, you guys are willing to work with the actor.
And budget permitting and studio permitting, like there is a lot of, I think, understanding and knowing that information up front lets us be able to shepherd that through the process. It's something that I can't get hit with that at the end. If I know before my producers ever see a take that you've done, he's in the UK, he doesn't currently have a visa, blah, or he's in Australia, he has an O-1, like, just understand, and that's always very important to us, what the immigration status is and where you physically are in the world. Like, yes, he can work here, but he's actually currently in the UK right now. Okay, that's because the production would travel, like, especially if you're testing, like, they're going to travel the actors in to test. That's not something that we're going to ask the actors to cover themselves. So do we have budget to fly in someone from the UK and put them up for 3 days? And are we in a position to do that? And the more we informate, it's just information. It's information for us to have that then our creative team can use to make decisions.
Which basically falls on the actor to make sure the reps are informed. And then the reps obviously translate that to you, but
yes,
the actor needs to be informed or informing. Yeah.
And it's my job to keep asking the questions.
Sure.
You know, I think that's what we, sure. I mean, that's what we sort of tell our assistants, like, keep drilling down until you get the final answer. Well, why are they not available? What are they shooting? When are they shooting? What are the dates of that they're shooting? Or, you know, just to kind of keep asking until you have a full picture of what's going on. Just so it's information. It's not a judgment on the actor. It's not, I don't really care. I just need to know it so that when the time comes to make a decision, everybody has everything that they need to know to make an informed decision.
Yeah, totally agree. I think, I wanted to bring it up just because, as you can imagine, a lot of people that do tune in are non-American actors, either mm-hmm. British or some part of Europe. And the visa does come up quite often. And I think it's important to make it clear that, you know, series reg, you might help with that, but otherwise, no. And also, I guess at this stage, it doesn't make sense to maybe even go for a visa and come out to LA or New York at the moment with the way that the market is. Or would you disagree and say, if you really want to do it, still do it?
That's a tough question. I mean, again, my experience with the visa is somewhat limited, but my understanding of it is there's the clock starts ticking.
Yep.
Like, once you're approved and you come into the States on that visa, like, you have a finite window of time in which you can work. I would say 2019, you asked me this question. Yeah, come on. Like, if you can get the visa and get the paperwork and you have a place to stay here, come on. Now I don't know that I can fully recommend that someone make that jump right now, because while stuff while there's a lot of pre-production that's coming back, and there are shows that are going back into production, the volume of work, I think, at this exact moment on October 6, 2020, is far less than it was a year ago. And do you want your clock to start now?
Sure. Yeah. I think the best thing people can do if they want to do it is, like you said before, get all their info together, get all the case stuff together, just there, ready. And when the time feels like it's more appropriate, they've used this time to collate all of that stuff anyway.
And to also work with your reps too. Like if your reps are saying, if you have an American manager who's saying, you need to be here, like they feel like there's an opportunity for you here because of relationships they have or connections that they have and projects that they know about that I don't know about.
Sure.
You know, stuff that's in development that having you here to get an international actor attached to, like that, I think is just really being honest about it. And just it's
conversation,
because I feel like most people are either going to have to come here on no one that's sponsored by a management company or by a production. So they're either going to have the job or with a management company that says we're willing to sponsor you to do this.
Yep.
So if that's the case, then just having those real honest conversations of what does the landscape look like for me right now? And if through that discussion, you both feel like it's a good, smart career choice for you, then that's a decision to make. Yeah,
absolutely. Awesome. Seth, I'm sure we could chat forever and ever, and I've enjoyed it.
I know I could, because I talk a lot.
I'm gonna sort of slowly wrap it up with a few final questions and thoughts just to let you actually have your day ahead of you and not eaten up by me. My sort of first one is, obviously, with you having been an actor and then made that transition now into casting, if you were to be able to go back and share what you've learned from the process of casting with your starter acting self, what kind of advice or sort of knowledge would you share with, you know, Seth, who had a few acting jobs under his belt, or none?
It's not about you. Like that it's that I think I understand. I knew that intellectually always, that the process was, there were many cooks in the kitchen and many, many factors to it. But I think even more so now, having been on the side of seeing the submissions, setting the sessions, reading the actors, going through it time after time after time after time, you know, episode after episode, that it's to tie back into the point about not making the audition so important, just understanding that it's, you have the job. Like, it's not about you. Like, maybe you're going to get it, maybe you're not. This is such a business and an industry that is so subjective and so collaborative, that the fact that anything gets cast ever is a miracle. And when you don't get the job, it is not a reflection on your talent. It's not a reflection on you as a human being. It's not a reflection on the audition that you gave. It's just part of the thing. It's not about you. It's about the 16 other people that weighed in on the auditions before they made a decision. And to allow myself the freedom to accept that and to not, I mean, I spoke about it. Like, I put so much pressure on me to get the job, that it's, that would be the biggest thing. And to have fun. My God, this is, if you're gonna do this job, it's the hardest job in the world. Like, don't, have fun. You've got to have fun. You've got to enjoy and love what you're doing. And
don't make it so serious all
the time. No. Yeah. Yeah. Do the work. Be on time. Know your lines. Have fun.
If you're working in a bank or a corporate job, you need to be on time and do your job. I think you're right. I think I love what you said about, you know, intellectualizing it, because people, I think, intellectually do grasp that concept across the board, just like you said you did. It's giving yourself, to your point, that that freedom and that permission to just really absorb that and find out for you, however you're wired as a person, which is different to, you know, the actor next to you, what that looks like. Because it's such a personal journey. We want the magic bullet, you know, we want the if I do A, B, and C, I'll get the promotion kind of formula, which just does not exist.
It does not. That you're in, then you're in the wrong, then you should go work for a bank. Like if that's sort of how you are expecting this business to work, you're always going to be disappointed. Because it won't.
Yeah. Exactly.
It just won't. And that's not a reflection on you for not having done the right things. It's just not how this business is structured to work.
For real. Absolutely. I always like to wrap these up with the 10 questions that the great James Lipton used to ask on Inside the Actor's Studio.
Okay. All right.
And I'm definitely asking them now because of that reaction. So quick fire questions, just whatever comes to mind, if you're up for it. The first one is, what is your favorite word?
Fuck.
What is your least favorite word?
Can't.
What turns you on in a creative, spiritual, intellectual kind of way?
Wow, that's a tough question. I think from the stories I like, maybe that's kind of the creative stories that I'm, sure. I like underdog stories. I like people who have to fight to overcome something. And those are the stories and things that I sort of connect with.
Cool. On the flip, what turns you off? That could be narratively or just something in life that really just doesn't resonate with you.
It goes back to the word that I hate. Can't. People who give up, who don't try, who say that I can't do something. I think there's always a way to do, it may not look the way that you think that it's supposed to look, but you can always do something.
You've already kind of answered this, but I'm going to ask it again anyway. What's your favorite curse word?
Fuck. Yeah.
What is your favorite sound or noise?
Oh. These stress me out because I feel like I want to have good answers for them and I knew that I never did. Sound or noise. I live by the ocean, and I think that the ocean, because it's a very settling like reminder of the vastness of the world outside of me, that is that there's so much more. I'm so small in comparison to the vastness of the universe, so the ocean.
What sound or noise do you hate?
The leaf blowers that are almost always on outside my house when I'm trying to do one of these, which I'm surprised hasn't come on today.
Well, pandemic, hopefully. Hopefully they're being more sensible about how often
they Oh my God, you would not believe, like literally every day. Like how many people have yards that need leaf blowing right now? And they're every day. And there's also these really annoying ravens that sit in the palm trees outside of our house that like caw all day. That's another sound that I
Well, hate. That one we can let on because it's nature. The leaf blower thing is slightly different. What job or profession other than your own would you most want to attempt?
Oh, that's a good one. Because I would have said casting like that. Maybe a teacher.
Okay. Similar kind of, you know, overlaps, I think, in some ways with casting, right, in terms of the traits.
Yeah, and I really, and I sort of approach it from, I have a, I like, it's not trite. I mean, I do sort of like the little like phrases. I have like some of the inspirational phrases. And I really like the one, be the change you want to see in the world, or be the person that you wished you had as a kid. Mm-hmm. Like for me, that's what draws me to that is, and then that's why I like having this conversation with you is I wish there had been a casting person 10 years ago, 12 years ago, that was just like, dude, it's not about you. Like they sort of gave me that very, I understand where you are.
Empathy.
I understand how you get in your head, and here's how you can sort of avoid some of the pitfalls that held me back. That's what I like when I have the opportunity to be that for someone. I mean, that sounds selfish that I like feeling that way, but I like I like helping other people navigate the thing that tripped me up.
I can't see how it could be selfish if it's being of service to others. Granted, you might feel good by doing it, but
right.
There's nothing wrong with that. There's
right. It's like, I'm not doing it to feel good. I just happen to feel good by
it. It's like it reminds me of that Friends episode where they try and see if they can all do a selfless act or something. And like Phoebe's just like, no, like everybody, when you do anything in whatever guise in life, inherently there's some innate reason that it makes you feel or desire or experience something that you want more of. But that game, I guess, is to do stuff that adds value to others and get that feeling too. And so, you know, you're doing that with what you do now. That's what teaching would be as well. And I don't think that's selfish. You know, selfish would be being like a banker who gets a payout after they've just screwed over the entire population. Right. That's selfish. On that note, what job or profession would you never want to do under any circumstances?
Waiter, food server, working in a restaurant. They are the most, it's something that I understand how hard that job is and how thankless that job is. It's not something that I've ever done. I know that I don't know that I could keep my cool as well as someone who in that profession. And it's just, I don't know that I would be terrible at it. I would get fired very quickly.
Especially in the States where it's so heavily based on tips. Mm-hmm. Like in Europe, they get a slightly healthier sort of base wage.
Minimum wage, yeah.
Final question, a little bit more ethereal, but just to kind of button this off, when it's all said and done, what would you like the story of your life to be? What kind of legacy would you like to have created?
I don't want it to sound, I mean, I hope it doesn't sound trite, but like that I left it better than I found it in relationship wise, that it just, that all the time and energy that I've spent doing what I do here helped to make it better in some way and not help make it better in some way, that I left it better than I found it.
Absolutely not trite in any way, I think.
Yeah.
You know, and that kind of shines through having spoken to you for the last hour or so, that is sort of implicitly a big part of just who you seem to come across as being, as a person. Forget casting and all the labels that we put onto, you know, what we do as humans after, just as a guy. Seth, it's been awesome. I've loved it. Final moment to you, I guess, just to button it off. Any closing remark that you want to leave people that are tuning in with to kind of take away? And then if they can connect with you on the socials or anything like that, where people can find you if they want to.
Well, if they've lasted this long, because we've gone on for a minute, and then I applaud you for listening to me talk this long. I applaud you for the work that you're doing and the risk that you take by choosing a career that is challenging, is tough, is thankless a lot of the times, and know that you have fans that, you know, I'm talking to you, I'm talking now as a casting person, that I believe in you, I want you to get the job, I want you to get everything that you want. And casting does want to help actors get that job, move from a co-star to a guest star. We're here for you. We're your fans. We love you. Hang in there. Keep trusting us. We'll keep doing good work. We'll keep looking for something for you until we find it. Socials, I'm on Instagram is my, I'm on Instagram and Twitter. It's both at Seth Caskey, just my name, all lowercase. Instagram is the one I'm a little more active on. And then if there's any actors that are watching that want to send me their materials, you can visit my website, which is sethcaskey.com. And then there's a place there. If you go to contact, and then there's a section that's specifically for actors. Tell me, you know, if you have reps, let me know who your reps are. If you want to send me links to your materials, your website, I kind of keep an internal database of actors that way. So that's a great way to digitally get me your postcard. That's kind of get me that stuff there, and use that. And you can use that also to let me know of, you know, as we all start to get back to work, if you've got new stuff coming out or things that you want me to be aware of, that's a good place to let me know.
All right. That's the episode with casting director Seth Caskey. I hope you found it useful and insightful. I know we spoke about a lot of different things there, but some really interesting bits of information and insights from Seth. I think for me, one of the ones that stands out the most was when he said that you should realize that you've booked the job by the fact that he's requested for you to come and self-tape or audition for him in person. And to take those 5 or 10 minutes as your chance to show what you can do, that is the job. And if it goes beyond that from there, bonus. And if not, they're always keeping you in mind. That was really prevalent from talking to Seth today, especially, that they always find ways of thinking about you for when the right thing does come along. If you do want to reach out to Seth, like he said, you can find him on the socials. His website is probably the best bet. Go to sethcaskey.com. You'll find a section on there specifically for actors. And as he mentioned, you can go ahead, reach out to him, send him an email through there with a link to your showreel or links to, I guess, any work that you might want him to see and check out. As for what's coming up next on the show, the next guest is going to be UK casting director Sharon Sorrentino. So stay tuned for that. And in the meantime, stay well. Thank you, as always, for listening to these. And if you enjoy them, if you think that, you know, someone in your circle who's an actor might find them interesting and helpful, please do share. That's always appreciated. And until next time, stay well